evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Tuesday, November 26, 2024. A civil society activist at the Kenyan-brokered South Sudan talks says his group is still waiting for the government delegation to resume talks.
We are holding the bull by its horn, but so long as there is a mosquito that bites us behind, like the national security bill, which does not allow freedom of expression and freedom of assembly, it makes it difficult to hold the bull on the horn because something is biting you at back.
And a new report says the number of people displaced in Africa has tripled to 35 million.
Kalindi says we live in constant fear. Everywhere we go, seeking safety, we face new dangers and are forced to flee again. War has been a constant problem.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The Kenyan-brokered peace talks for South Sudan, called the Tumaini Initiative, appears to be facing challenges. The talks, launched on May 9, incorporated all holdout groups that have not signed the 2018 Revitalized Peace Agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan. Quel Aguer Quel is an activist at the talks. He says the government delegation is taking too long to return to the negotiations after its consultation with President Salva Kiir on the talks' progress.
The two presidents had a meeting. After the meeting, it was actually both of them who issued communique, saying that the talk will resume and should be concluded in 2 weeks' time. However, it was not clear when will the 2 weeks start. So what we learned at last was that the government was to change the team that was negotiating for the last, I don't know how many months, from May up to September. They have to make a big change of the team and have a new team and a new leadership, because what followed in that evening was the dismissal of the head of the team.
Were there reasons given for the change of government delegation's team? I mean, nothing happens for no reason.
No reason was given. What happened, it wasn't only him, but also key members of the team were dropped from the new list. That is to say, Michael McQuay and Dr. Akol Paul and Gabriel Sangson, who was representing SAWA, and they were replaced with new people such as Martin Elia Lomoro, Port Kang, and then Lamakol, and then on top of them, Kwal Manyang. And all of them have been making a statement against Tumaini.
What do you mean they have been making statements against Tumaini? They are going to be representing the government. Could you give us an example of a statement that they made which is against the Tumaini initiative?
General Kwal Manyang said that these people who are negotiating, they are only 5 people and they don't have that political weight and they don't have army. So why should people waste time?
The group you represent, the People's Coalition for Civic Action, has also been calling on the government, saying the government is not serious about the Tumaini initiative. The government will take that as a negative statement too.
Yes, if you say somebody is not serious about something, it doesn't mean that we are negative to the process. It means that we want people to come and talk, because that is the only weapon we have. We don't have guns. We only have to negotiate because we are a non-violence organization. And if there is an opportunity for that to talk, then that will be our forum. So we cannot work against it. That is why we are here for the last 6-7 months, waiting for the government to come back.
During the wait, what is the latest information that you have at hand regarding the resumption of these talks?
The letters we have are actually media information. Kwal Manyang was interviewed by Radio Tomasi, and he said that his team will start arriving as from Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. The starting will be determined by their arrival. So that will be the time. The mediation will fix time to start the negotiation, the resumption of the talk.
What is the communication from the mediator, General Lazarus Simbeyo, about the arrival of the government delegation? Of course, Kwal Manyang has all the rights to tell an outlet, but isn't it the mediator who should tell you when the talks will resume?
Yeah, the mediation did not tell us because I'm not sure that they might have not received official communication from government delegation saying we are arriving this time so that they can make a schedule. So that I think that might be the reason why they are quiet.
And what is left on the Tumaini to-do list? You started in May and we are now almost reaching December.
When the government delegation went back to Juba on the 3rd of September, they went with the proposed responsibility sharing in both the executive and the implementation mechanisms. These were the things that were left for them to go and consult the parties to our access, to see how they can share among themselves, because it was agreed that the government should not be expanded and the government should not be reduced. So they should work within the current context of size of government, both assembly and the executive.
This is a final question here. Talk to me about the fears of the population. You are a civil society activist and you represent the people. People are afraid that the Tumaini Initiative is another way of prolonging their sufferings. What do you say to that?
You know, they are right in their thinking. I know that Tumaini people were expecting a lot out of it, because that was the first initiative made by the president, and it brought on board three important things: leadership, political will, and commitment. But as for late, I think these three important aspects of peace in South Sudan are fading away. Because if the government delegation can go for 3 months without returning on time, then it means there is lack of seriousness and lack of commitment. The fear is that they might sign this agreement, they take it back to Juba, don't implement it, and they continue to remain in power as usual. People are really very worried about the stability of the country. Even if we sign agreements, the implementation will be an issue.
Governor Aguirre, you sound worried too. And if the civil society is worried, then who is supposed to rescue the country? Or who is supposed to give hope?
The person to give hope are people themselves, because you know the country belongs to people of South Sudan. We civil society speak on behalf of people. But if we tell them that we don't hope that something good will happen out of this, then it will be their duty to decide what to do, because the country don't belong to civil society. It belongs to people of South Sudan.
But you have consecrated yourself to speak on behalf of the people of South Sudan. And so any ordinary citizen will say, don't quit, hold the bull by its horn.
We are holding the bull by its horn. But so long as there is a mosquito that bite us at behind, like the National Security Bill, which does not allow freedom of expression and freedom of assembly, it makes it difficult to hold the bull on the horn, because something is biting you at back. Whether you have to deal with that or you have to deal with the bull is something.
That's Kwel Aguirre Kwel, former governor of Northern Bahr al-Ghazal State and the founding member of the People's Coalition for Civic Action. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital earlier today. The number of people killed in Sudan's conflict is far higher than previously thought. That's according to a new research. The conflict has forced 11 million people to flee their homes and created the world's worst hunger crisis. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Khartoum's residential streets are lined with hundreds of graves. Cemeteries have run out of space. Abdin Kidir is an undertaker in Omdurman, a western district of Khartoum.
The numbers of dead became really big. We bury at least 50 people per day. These are all fresh bodies.
Sudan's civil war erupted in April 2023, a brutal power struggle between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. An estimate widely used by international aid agencies said just over 20,000 civilians had died from the violence in the first 14 months of the war. But a new study from the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine looked at multiple sources and suggests the death rate is much higher. Maysoon Dahab is lead author of the report.
In the first 14 months of the war, there has been a 50% increase in the death rate in Khartoum State alone. That amounts to about 61,000 deaths due to disease, starvation, and directly from the violence itself. Amongst that 61,000, we have about 26,000 who have been killed directly by violence.
Separately, the aid group Doctors Without Borders says that since January this year, one in six of its patients at a Khartoum hospital were children under 15. Many sustained severe injuries from gunshots, blasts and shrapnel. There's also been a rise in cases of severe malnutrition among children. The United Nations says the conflict has forced 11 million people to flee their homes, with some 25 million people, half of Sudan's population, needing food aid, making it the world's biggest hunger crisis. It's vital that more is done to end the suffering, says Dahab.
So in the case of the international community, ensuring the understanding that aid efforts need to be increased, scaled and put out to inaccessible populations. In terms of actors who are shaping the war, what we hope to put out in terms of the research is the true price of this war, so that they are able to make their decision based on those facts.
The United States Special Envoy for Sudan, Thomas Perriello, travelled to Khartoum last week for talks with Sudan's army chief.
We also share the aspiration for this war to end as soon as possible, to see an end to the horrific atrocities.
There are few signs that either the Sudanese army or the rapid support forces are ready to agree a truce. Meanwhile, Russia last week vetoed a UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire, saying the process excluded Sudan itself. Britain, which sponsored the resolution alongside Sierra Leone, labelled Moscow's veto a disgrace. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News.
The UN's World Food Programme says its first food trucks in several months had got through to a famine-stricken camp for displaced people in Sudan. The UN agency's Sudan spokesperson, Lenin Kinsley, says WFP trucks arrived in northern Darfur's Zamzam camp last Friday, where famine was confirmed earlier this year. The French news agency AFP reports that the WFP food teams, the first into the camp in months, are carrying emergency food aid for 12,500 people. The North Darfur state capital, El Fasher, has been under siege by the paramilitary rapid support forces, or RSF, for months, nearly disabling all aid operations in the region and pushing nearby Zamzam into famine. War has ravaged since April 2023 between the Sudanese army and de facto ruler General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the RSF led by his former deputy, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo. It has triggered one of the world's worst humanitarian crises. More than 25 million people, over half of the population, are facing acute hunger. A new report from International Displacement Monitoring Center says the number of people displaced in Africa has tripled to 35 million people. Of these, 32.5 million abandoned their homes due to conflict and violence. The report published Tuesday says government efforts to address internal displacement on the continent have been commendable, but not enough. Muhammad Yusuf has more on the plight of the displaced from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
24-year-old Amani Kalindi has not known peace since he was a boy growing up in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. The truck driver is one of millions of Africans displaced from their homes due to conflict, disasters, and climate change. Kalindi says, "We live in constant fear. Everywhere we go, seeking safety, we face new dangers and are forced to flee again. War has been a constant problem, with foreign armed groups invading our country to fight over its resources and minerals. We also endure intercommunal violence." He also says that recently he had to flee because of tribal conflict. With nowhere else to turn, he says, he decided to come to Uganda and seek refuge in a camp. Kalindi came to Uganda on Saturday after spending years in Ituri and North and South Kivu provinces in the DRC. Escaping danger, he joined millions of others from Africa and beyond in registering as a refugee. In a new report published Tuesday, the Geneva-based Internal Displacement Monitoring Center says the large majority of people displaced worldwide are in Africa. The report looks at the new trends and developments of the displaced from 2009 to 2023 and finds that the number of people forced from their homes has tripled to 35 million. Almost 93% are displaced due to conflict and violence, and 26 million of them are displaced in just five countries: the Democratic Republic of Congo, Ethiopia, Nigeria, Somalia, and Sudan. Experts say poverty, inequality, and marginalization are among the many factors that fuel conflict and violence, and armed groups have exploited these grievances, which create more displacements. IDMC Director Alexandra Bilak says violence is not solely blamed for the crisis.
So five countries on the African continent are generating the most conflict-related internal displacement. But what our report also shows, as I said, is that disaster displacement is also rising. We are now reporting six times more disaster displacements than 15 years ago.
Floods and droughts trigger the majority of disaster displacements. IDMC researchers warn climate change will make these weather-related events more frequent and intense, and they expect these displacement trends to continue. With the heightening conflict in Sudan, the chronic armed conflict in DR Congo, and weather-related disasters hitting communities, Balik says it's hard to see the numbers going down.
It's hard to be optimistic. We know that with the impacts of climate change, the disasters that we're seeing already today are likely to increase in the future. We have seen prolonged periods of droughts across the Horn of Africa. And without more investments in the underlying causes of this displacement, we fear that the numbers will indeed continue rising.
The Internal Displacement and Monitoring Center notes that some African countries have developed national policies to protect and assist internally displaced persons in accordance with a 2009 African Union agreement. Beyond national legislation and policies, Nigeria issues birth certificates and national identification cards to the displaced, ensuring they are recognized and have access to government services. Balik says implementing such solutions is necessary for countries to reach development goals. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a U.S. judge is dropping the criminal case against President-elect Donald Trump. Find out why after the break.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The United States is urging the Zimbabwe government to double down on reforms aimed at returning the country to prosperity it once enjoyed. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe, where negotiations on clearing the country's $21 billion debt have begun with African Development Bank.
Speaking to reporters in Harare on Monday, Pamela Tremont, the U.S. ambassador to Zimbabwe, said her country wants to have cordial relations with the Southern African nation. She urged the government to pursue political and financial reforms that she said would deliver Zimbabwe's people the prosperity and dignity they deserve.
We're here today as part of our commitment to the Zimbabwean people that is long-standing and consistent, and we're here to advocate for the reforms that the international community has been asking for many years. We need public officials to quit using their public offices for private gain. We need the judiciary to be able to deliver justice independently of political considerations, and we need Zimbabweans' rights to assembly and free speech to be fully respected.
Tremont spoke as talks on restructuring Zimbabwe's $21 billion debt began. Akinwumi Adesina, president of the African Development Bank, called for negotiations on the debt to speed up.
Even wars never last. It is fairly time to bring these to a close and the decades of untold damage to the economy of Zimbabwe, the suffering of its people, and have a new beginning with collective hope, aspiration, and shared prosperity for its people today and well into the future. It is time to make Zimbabwe beautiful again. No one, no matter how strong, can run up a hill carrying a big pack or piles of sand on their back. The $21 billion debt of Zimbabwe, of which the bulk, I must say, is actually arrears, has made arrears the new debt, like stacks, piles of sandbags on the back of Zimbabwe. Now, we all agree we must play our part to correct this anomaly and give a new lease of life to this nation.
Adesina was asking institutions such as the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to finance new loans for Zimbabwe and forgive or reduce old debts. At the same meeting, President Emmerson Mnangagwa appealed for debt to be restructured so Zimbabwe can access credit lines.
The successful implementation of our arrears debts in the debt resolution strategy is key for Zimbabwe to unlock new concessional external financing, critical for achieving our economic development objectives. I call for the continued support of international financial institutions, development funds, our credit lines in the international community, to the arrears, clearance, and debt resolution process. Access to external concessional financing will be key for long-term funding of our projects and programs.
Zimbabwe's national debt has climbed steadily since the early 2000s, when land confiscations by the government led to sharply reduced food production and sent the economy into a tailspin. Some government officials maintain that Zimbabwe cannot access credit lines because of the targeted sanctions imposed on some leaders for alleged election rigging and human rights abuses in the early 2000s. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
From Zimbabwe, we come back to the United States, where U.S. prosecutors on Monday asked a U.S. judge to drop the criminal cases against President-elect Donald Trump of seeking to overturn his 2020 election defeat and unlawful withholding classified documents, citing his impending return to the presidency following his successful 2024 campaign. For analysis, VOA Scott Walterman and Lori Lodin reports.
Well, he's asked President Trump to be dismissed from both cases, but the documents case will continue because there are other defendants in that case, and there's an important legal issue that's on appeal, namely whether or not the Attorney General violated the appointments clause by appointing a special counsel, and that if the special counsel is an officer of the United States, then the Senate must be able to consent or advise on the appointment. So but that issue is still live. That issue will continue. And indeed, President Trump's alleged co-conspirator will still possibly stand trial in a documents case. But as for January 6th, Jack Smith bowed to the longtime Department of Justice policy that there be no prosecutions of a sitting president, no matter how grave. And so we ask that the case be dismissed, and it is very, very unlikely to be revived even after a four-year term in office.
They did file papers in the Palm Beach case asking the case to stay on appeal, but they did withdraw Donald Trump from the suit.
It's a consistent policy in both cases. The special counsel decided to his actions with DOJ precedent and decided to dismiss President Trump from both cases. That doesn't suggest that we've seen the end of this. Jack Smith is likely to write a full report, perhaps some kind of information excised in terms of privilege, but full report about what he viewed the evidence in the case and presumably how damning it was against the current, well, president-to-be.
What happens to all the other people that are involved, been either charged or already serving time as far as this case goes?
So Jack Smith's move does not affect either the indictments against other individuals for the insurrection on January 6th, nor does it affect the people who have been convicted of the attempted obstruction of the ballot counting on that day. However, President Trump has said that he will likely pardon those or most of those who engaged in the insurrection on January 6th. So that's to be seen. And he has the power then to order the attorney general, or to request the Attorney General to dismiss the indictments of those that are pending.
That's all we prepared for you this Tuesday, November 26, 2024. We now leave you with Emmanuel Jal and the song War Child.
Reason to tell my story, to touch lives. I believe I've survived for a reason to tell my story, to touch lives. All people struggling down there. Storms only come for a while, then after a while, they'll be gone. Bless, bless. My father was working for the government as a policeman. Few years later, I heard he joined a rebel movement that was formed to fight for freedom. I didn't understand the politics behind all this, cause I was only a child. After a while, I saw the tension rising high between the Christian and the Muslim regime. We lost our possessions. My mother's mother suffered depression. And because of this, I was forced to be a war child.
We have been listening to Emmanuel Jal and the song War Child. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Cornelius, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Our share is everywhere. In our pain, what wanna gain? Wanna pray to maintain. Wanna pray to maintain. Wanna pray to maintain.